Chapter 9. Vince. Further anecdotes about which the thoughtful reader might wonder how the gods of sexual fortune managed to smile on Vince even in the most unlikely straits. 2 weeks after the Theater of Pain tour, I put my brand new $12,000 diamond bezel gold Rolex safely in my drawer, took a cab to the nearest precinct station house, and turned myself in. I wanted to get it over with. They brought me to a quiet jail in Torrance to serve my 30 days. My cellmate was in jail for stealing sports cars, and we were both trustees, which meant we had to bring food to the other prisoners, clean cells, and wash cop cars. In return, we got privileges. Not just television and visitors, but on weekends, the guards would bring us burgers and a six-pack. I'd just spent almost a year on the road trying to stay sober to please the court, and now that I was in jail, the guards were encouraging me to drink. Though the sergeant on the night shift hated my guts, everyone else wanted autographs and photos. In many ways, the rehab, guilt, newspaper headlines, and sober touring had been a much worse sentence than prison. One afternoon, a blonde fan who had figured out what jail I was in stopped by to visit. She was wearing Daisy Dukes and a Lycra tie front halter top, and the sergeant on duty said I could bring her back to my cell for an hour. I walked her through the corridor, watching all the other prisoners salivate as we paraded by. I took her into my cell, shut the door, and fucked her on my cot. I could do no wrong in the eyes of my prison mates after that. The day before I started my sentence, Beth and I had moved into a $1.5 million house in Northridge with our 2.5-year-old daughter, Elizabeth. Beth visited me in prison every day for the first week. Then she suddenly stopped coming. I didn't really think much about it. I wasn't in love with her when we married, and it had only gone downhill from there. After 19 days, the warden released me for good behavior. Since I hadn't heard from Beth, I had a buddy pick me up outside. We drove to Northridge, but I couldn't remember where our house was. After an hour of searching, we finally stumbled across it. I walked to the door and rang the bell. Nobody was home. I walked around and checked the windows, but all the curtains were drawn. Maybe we were at the wrong house. I walked around the back and was pretty sure I recognized the pool in the yard, so I decided to break in. There was a glass door, and I shattered one of the panes near the handle, reached around and opened it, praying that I wouldn't get sent right back to jail for breaking and entering. I walked inside and looked around. It was my house, but something was different. All the furniture was gone. Beth had taken everything, even the ice trays in the freezer. All she left behind was my Rolex and my Camaro Z28. The only problem was that she had taken the keys. I called Beth's parents, her grandparents, and her friends, and they all claimed they hadn't heard from her. I wasn't that interested in talking to her. I just wanted a divorce, my car keys, and some way to stay in touch with my daughter. I didn't see Beth again for almost 10 years, when she appeared at a concert in Florida with her husband and new children in tow. Our daughter, Elizabeth, eventually moved to Nashville to try and make it as a country singer. As for me, after a year of policed sobriety, prison therapy, and repentance, it was time to have a little responsible fun. I moved a couple of buddies in, and instead of buying furniture, installed a mud pit next to the pool for female wrestling. I invited all the drug dealers I knew to hang out at my place, because wherever there were drugs, there were girls. At one of my parties, a bunch of guys in suits who I didn't know walked in. On the way out, one of them handed me a rock of cocaine as big as a golf ball, tipped his hat, and said, as if he was the godfather or something, "Thanks for your hospitality." After that, he was at my house every night. His name was Whitey, a drug dealer who probably did more coke than he sold, the house guest who never went away. He'd spent some time in New Mexico and pretty soon started bringing his New Mexico buddies over, particularly a tough-looking, tender-hearted, bath-deprived man named Randy Castillo. Some nights ended up with a lot of girls in lingerie, and Whitey, Randy, and a select few other friends in bathrobes. Other nights, I'd bring a dozen girls back from the Tropicana to wrestle nude for me and my buddies. I wanted so badly to forget about the past year, to stop being Vince Neil and start being someone else, like Hugh Hefner.